Welcome to another episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Doc Eel, and today my guest is draft expert Cole Zwicker. He writes for 16 Wins a Ring, The Step Back, also has a draft podcast called What's on the Draft. We talked all NBA draft. We got into his top 10, we got into who's his sleepers, who might rise, who might fall, who's overrated. So, you ready to tip it off? Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Doc Eel, and today my guest is Cole Zwicker, and he's a busy man. He's a contributor for The Step Back, for 16 Wins a Ring, and hosts a podcast on called What's on Draft. And that's going to be our subject for today, the NBA Draft, which I don't know much about because I don't watch enough college, so I brought in a pro. Cole, how you doing?
Doing well, man. I'm not sure if I'm a pro, but I guess when you endure that much college basketball, you got to get some title out of it. So I'm happy for that. This
way. You're way more a pro than I am when it comes to college basketball. I don't watch enough of it. I can get into it in the summertime of why I dislike college basketball so much, but I tend to just not watch it at all. And if I can avoid it, I try to. But it does give me a disadvantage come this time of year when it's the draft, and I don't know much about these guys. So why don't you talk to me here a little bit? We've been hearing all year long about, wow, this is a great draft. This is going to be one of the best drafts ever. Just so you know, I heard the same thing last year. I heard this the year before. I heard it before the year before that. So really my question to you is, how deep is this draft?
I think it goes 10 to 12 deep as far as quality players. That's the thing about this draft is people came in with the expectation of like 7 or 8 all-stars because that was like the build-up narrative. I don't think you're going to see that. It's actually not that many high ceiling outcome guys at the top. You have Markelle Fultz, as in my opinion, in his own tier, is kind of that high floor, high ceiling prospect. But after that, the next 5 or 6 guys, you can go a lot of different ways with. But one thing they have in common is I think they all contribute at some level. They project to at least have a baseline floor of productivity, and you don't see that in a lot of drafts. Like last year, there was a lot of indecisiveness after like the third pick. People didn't really know what to do, even after the top two, actually, with Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. This year, I think there's more of a fortified floor after that, so we'll just kind of have to see how these guys translate.
Gotcha. You know, the one thing I kind of look at it in every – the idea you come away with each draft, you know, is this a point guard heavy draft? Is it a wing heavy? Is it – you know, big man based, what, when you're looking at the guys you're seeing at the draft and everything, what's your feel for it in terms of when you look at it in that sense?
Well, the first takeaway is it's definitely not a big man draft. I think the best big man in it is Jonathan Isaac, who most still probably consider a wing, even though he's more of a 4 small ball 5 type. But there are no, I only have one big in the lottery right now, Zach Collins, who came off the bench for Gonzaga. He's the only 5 man that I have in the lottery. So that should tell you just kind of the depth of that position in the draft. If you want a big man, wait until the next class when you have an abundance of them that are all better prospects than these guys. But it's definitely a point guard driven draft. Depending on what you think of Lonzo Ball, how he actually fits into a traditional lead guard role, he could be more of a situational handler in that respect. But for the most part, and Neal Keener as well, he's kind of another, he's like a triangle point guard type. Worst case scenario is a secondary ball handler. But overall, definitely the league, it's lead guard driven, and there's definitely some wings.
I'm pretty sure Phil Jackson's ears perked up when you said, you know, Nyakita, whose name I can't pronounce, is a point guard, or a triangle point guard type guy. I'm pretty sure he just perked up going like, yeah, he is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's kind of go right to it. You know, who are your top 10 prospects? Like, what's your big board? This is the Cole Zwicker big board. Who's your top 10?
The only thing I have for certain right now is number one is Markelle Fultz in his own tier. I think that he's earned that as far as a high ceiling outcome guy. Basically fits exactly what you want as a modern NBA lead guard and being a 3-level scorer who can also pass. Really incredible handling style. He kind of has that side-to-side agility with the ball. He's really deceptive with his dribble, like working on hang dribbles and stuff like that. So I think overall he had the productivity this year at Washington, even though they didn't win. But he was efficient on ridiculous usage. So he kind of separated himself a little bit. After that, you have a tier for me of about 6 guys right now. I'm really high on Dennis Smith. I have him number 2. A lot of guys have him outside the top 8 or so just because of how he performed this year, how North Carolina State performed this year. But when you take into consideration, he might not have been fully healthy. There's a lot of other effects there. He was working with less than pristine spacing. There wasn't any secondary handlers there. So it was basically all on him. I think he has a really high upside. Then you go into guys like Jonathan Isaac, Josh Jackson, Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum, and Malik Monk. Those are my existing top seven there. And then for me, it gets kind of dicey after that. I take kind of upside shots on OG Anunoby, like, the, in my opinion, the highest upside perimeter defender in the class, but very far away offensively. I have him at 8, Frank Ntilikina at 9, and then Zach Collins at 10. So really only one big in the top 10. And yeah, it's pretty fluid after one, I'd say, but I'm pretty close to saying those are my top 10 moving forward for sure.
Gotcha. So I've been studying all day on the draft and kind of narrowing down my top 10. And the one thing I want to say about this draft, I'm not even really convinced Fultz or Ball are a game changer the way people make it seem like they are. Like, they're just going to come in and, you know, step in right away and be your franchise player, and you have to build around these guys because these guys are the future. I just don't feel it when I watch them play. I don't feel it like that these guys are those guys. It's not like when I've watched Carl Anthony Towns, for example, play, and I was just like, holy shit, this guy's good. You know, and that's kind of the feel I get, but they're still good players. I'm not trying to say they're not going to be good players in the NBA. They're definitely going to be starters in the league, and certainly I may not have watched enough, and I can be wrong about them. But my top 10 goes, I got Fultz 1. Begrudgingly, I have Ball 2, just because I'm not really blown away by anybody else below him, but I'm not really. Also, so everybody does know, also, I am a USC Trojan alum, and so there is some bias there against Ball in that regards. But I have him at 2. I have Josh Jackson at 3. He kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, a better Andrew Wiggins. I don't know if that's a good comp in that sense. After that, I have De'Aaron Fox, who I love the way he played against Ball in that UCLA game where he just kind of took it to him. He's got to work on his shooting, though. That's definitely going to be a problem for him. But he can kind of be Rondo-esque with his long arms and things like that. Probably not as good, but hopefully also not as much of an attitude, as we would say, as Rondo had. Then I got Malik Monk, Jason Tatum, Jonathan Isaac. I have Smith after that. I didn't know Smith was a bit injured or when I didn't know the backstory on that. Just from what I saw on the tape, I just wasn't blown away by him. I can see he's got some great athleticism behind him, but I just, again, just didn't really make me go like, gosh, I really want to see this guy. The kid from Indiana, OG, how do you say his last name?
Anunoby.
OG Anunoby. I got him, and then after that I got Frank Nikita out as the European international prospect that Phil Jackson's probably drooling over right now. So that's my top 10. I don't have a big man in it, which is kind of weird.
It is. Like I said, this is not the class for that. If you want a big man, I wouldn't draft one high in this class. I really like Zach Collins. That's the only reason I have him at 10.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see that. Who are some of the comps you have, like player comps? Like, when you look at a guy like Fultz, who are you kind of comparing Fultz to? Or you're like, he can kind of be like this player in the league?
He reminds me, scoring-wise, of like a Kyrie Irving blend with James Harden. He doesn't have that bull chest like Harden does, but he's really crafty around the rim, really good body control like Kyrie. But he also can pass. That's why I kind of blend them together, because Kyrie doesn't have the best vision, doesn't play make for others that well. I think that Fultz is capable of that. He didn't get to show it a lot at Washington just because they didn't have the surrounding talent level. But I do think he's kind of a blend of those two. In some sense, maybe not exactly, because player comps don't usually work precisely, but that's who I would kind of comp him to. Who the hell knows Alonzo Ball? That's the hardest comp I've ever had to make, because really nobody in the league makes sense for him. He kind of shoots like Kevin Martin, but he doesn't play like him, of course, because he's a leagues better as a passer. He's kind of a long shot comparison. Jonathan Isaac is another really original player. We haven't really seen a kind of wing like this who can swing to the four and small ball five a lot. He's just really original in how he plays. So this is the thing about this class, is like the comps don't make a lot of sense. People say Malik Monk, JJ Redick. Monk's way more athletic, can do things off the dribble a little bit better, you know, attack in straight lines, better vertical athlete. So if you're looking for comps, and this is why people have struggled so much with this draft, they just don't really exist in like good fashion.
Yeah, I could totally see it. I mean, it's sort of really just thought of like the new NBA and the way the NBA is going is we're getting these kinds of guys that are playing the game in ways we've never seen before. You know, pretty soon we're going to have a guy that should be a center play as a point guard. It's coming if it hasn't already, you know, but like we're going to see some big guy coming in. He's probably like in like 9th or 10th grade at this point now that we've never heard of. You know, just kind of the way where the NBA is going. So it's going to make it more and more difficult for these comps. I look at Ball a little bit and I kind of look at him, and this might get me killed, and I really am not trying to slander him in any way, but it's kind of like Ricky Rubio with a better jumper. Although I can't stand his jump shot at all. And I'm curious if he's really going to be able to get it off that consistently, you know, in the NBA or off the dribble, at the NBA level. So I kind of look at him slightly as a Ricky Rubio type of guy. He's an unreal passer. Like, he, you know, I wrote about this last year about Ben Simmons, and you know, I call, you know, passers like this kind of have the passing gene. It's something that Magic had. It's something that guys like Stockton, like CP, these guys just, they make passes just you never even knew were possible to make. And I really think Ball does have the passing gene. I think after that, though, I have a lot of questions about him in terms of kind of like a front runner guy or something. Like when Fox kind of got into his ass a little bit in that Kentucky game, you know, he folded to me in that tournament game, you know, and he kind of just said, fuck it, don't want to deal with this dude all the time. I'm going to pack my bags, going to declare for the draft as soon as the buzzer sounds, you know, and that was kind of his mentality, and I kind of felt that way as I was watching that game. It was one of the few college games I made it all the way through, and that was kind of a feel I got for it.
Yeah, I mean, Fox was really living off that game right now. I think a lot of it was UCLA's pick-and-roll scheme. They chased over the top on Fox every time and dropped a big back, and Fox scored every single time in pick-and-roll. I think all 8 possessions, it was their coverage is really bad. I mean, Fox definitely made Ball look bad in that game as far as lateral agility. Ball struggled with point-of-attack defense all year. He's not very quick laterally. He struggles navigating screens, so that really made him look bad. I get the Rubio comparison as well from an offensive standpoint. Defensively, Rubio is obviously a much better defender than Ball is on point guards. Ball is actually a really, really good defender off ball, one position. He's got really good instincts in the passing lanes. I think he's going to be a plus there, actually. He just doesn't really fit cleanly into a team construct because he can't guard point guards and he can't guard elite wings. But he can probably switch in time a little bit when he puts on strength. But with him, the main issue is offensively. His self-creation, his scoring ability is just not really there right now. His handle is, like, that's the most underratedly bad part of his game is his handle. Like, he is just not very advanced. He relies on basic crossover. He's not a very flexible athlete, doesn't have a lot of quick twitch, doesn't blow by guys. He's really just all he has done this year. His great numbers, his efficiency numbers are insane, but it's mostly noise. Like, their step back threes to the left, which every scouting report in the NBA is going to have, force him to his right, sit on his left side and make him shoot that way because it's hard for him to pull up off the dribble going right. So there's a lot of things that you have to get through, especially finishing too, because he doesn't have that same kind of Markelle Fultz contortion ability around the rim. He's more upright. So a lot of on-ball stuff I have questions with him, but what I like is that he's probably going to go to the Lakers, and the Lakers run that motion scheme where it's a lot of, you know, pass and move, and that's what really Ball thrives at. That's what he did at UCLA. So I think it's a clean projection as far as offensive fit there.
I could see that. I definitely could see. I mean, I'd be shocked if the Lakers don't pick him. I kind of think it'd be a phenomenal wrench in the Ball plan if the Lakers end up not drafting him. But I just don't. I mean, the story's too good to pass up. I mean, you know, the homegrown kid probably always dreamed of being a Laker all the way through, and went to UCLA. So along those lines, it's not that. The one thing I'd say that's kind of funny is it's not that different from the Steve Alford story that was supposed to happen, where the Pacers were supposed to draft him, but instead went with the skinny little kid from UCLA, coincidentally, Reggie Miller. And, you know, their front office got a whole lot of shit for passing up on the homegrown kid, but turned out that worked out pretty well for them in the long run. So I just don't think there's somebody there that really helps them. You know, they have to work. The Lakers have to get better defensively. Ball won't help them in that regards, but you know they have such a long way to go along this whole building project, and who knows where they're going to go. All the stories of drafting Paul or trading for Paul George and all of that, you're not really sure what's going to happen in that regard.
Yeah, there's not really a player in this class after Fultz that's going to step in and give them like superstar potential. Maybe even Fultz doesn't have that ability. I think he has the best potential, but I think you're right looking at this class. There's nobody that really jumps out at you and it's like, okay, this guy's a generational talent or like a franchise player. Ball is going to fit nicely offensively. Defensively, you hit the nail on the head. Him and D'Angelo Russell, I'm not sure if they can coexist as far as defensive backcourt. Neither of those guys excels at covering point guards. So there's a lot of work to be done there, but just getting another like productive young piece for that system can't be a bad thing.
No, not at all. Who do you have kind of earmarked as probably one of the better defenders in the draft? Like, who are your top three defenders in the draft?
Top three defenders, number one, OG Anunoby from Indiana. I think that he has all the tools you want in a wing defender. He's 235, really, really strong, tree trunk legs, almost a 7'3 wingspan. He's 6'8. He can switch pretty much every position, 1 through 5, if he has explosiveness bad, right? I mean, he suffered that injury. We don't know if he's going to be the same athletically. And for a guy that relies solely on his tools, he needs to have that explosiveness laterally especially. But if he's right, I think he's the best wing defender. I think the most versatile defender is Jonathan Isaac. He can guard wings. He can switch to the four. He can also protect the rim, which you never see from like these wing prospects. He can play some small ball five in the playoffs because we've seen the guys downsize. We get Kelly Olynyk and stuff at the five. Jonathan Isaac's way more better suited for that role. So he can play the most positions. He's the most versatile. Can really sink down in a stance for a guy that tall. So he's been pretty impressive. Josh Jackson would be third for me. Really hyper-competitive guy. I think his defense is a little overrated. He's not very strong. He has a little bit of wiry strength, but I don't see like him guarding, you know, obviously nobody's going to guard LeBron, but just bigger wings like that, Kawhi Leonard. He's not that kind of guy. He's not super elite laterally either, and his wingspan isn't that much. Like, he doesn't have that, like, base mark or baseline 7-foot wingspan that most of the elite defenders have, 6'11 stuff. So he doesn't really have the tools, but he does have the mindset to really compete, kind of like a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Maybe not like a, you know, a generationally elite defender, but like a sub-elite defender that, you know, tries really hard. So he can make do with that.
Gotcha. Okay. I like what you said about, God, I can't, what was his name again? OG?
Anunoby.
Anunoby. I'm going to get this by the end of this podcast. I'm going to be able to say his name properly, I hope, at least.
It's all good.
When I got to watch film of him, I'm like, he is built like a rock. So assuming the injury is fine, the knee injury, and he's able to recover properly, he is built like a defender. Like, that's the kind of size you do want on a defender and the strength you kind of need. So I'm with you there. I was surprised you didn't have Fox on your list. I obviously, maybe it's just because I was so happy that he beat UCLA. but I thought De'Aaron Fox was a pretty solid defender, especially on point guards and kind of chasing guys around.
Yeah, here's my issue with him. He's 169 right now, and there's a lot of reports that Kentucky had him at 185, which is kind of ludicrous, but he plays smaller than that. Like, he's not Chris Dunn of last year, where he's like a dynamic point of attack defender. He's ultra quick, but I mean, if you look at NBA defenders and how they thrive, like George Hill has a stronger base, longer, can recover better when he's beat. De'Aaron really struggles with that. Like, if you get him on a screen, he's not going to be able to like recover and contest shots because he doesn't have the frame to do that. And he doesn't have that outlier length. And he has like a 6'6 wingspan. So I like him as far as being able to stay in front of guys, but guys can just run through him too at this point. Like, if he was 185 or 190 and he had like a more established frame, I'd be a little higher on his defense. It's just hard to be that impactful. Like, Chris Paul is undersized, but he's really, really strong, and he can anchor well. That's what I don't see well from Fox. I think he's a good defender. I just don't think he's going to be impactful, if that makes sense.
No, that makes plenty of sense. I mean, he definitely has got to put some weight on and get to that point. But that makes plenty of good sense.
The thing with him is he's got really, really skinny legs. That's what worries me. Is like, I've seen him in person before, and he's got really skinny legs, so it's hard for him to like anchor, and it's hard for him to balance. Like, when he tries to finish through contact and NBA length at the rim, that's a huge concern for me. And this is the kind of where these player comps go awry. He gets a lot of John Wall comps. Wall was built. Like, he was 196 coming out of the draft. Like, stout lower body. He really filled out really well. And there's a big difference between guys like Fox, who struggle around length, and then guys like Wall, who can convert speed to power and traffic and finish. So I have some concerns with Fox.
Yeah, no, fair. That is perfectly fair. And it's hard to, even though I asked you for player comps, it is also hard to expect these guys to live up to these expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, this guy's going to be like John Wall. Yo, John Wall has proven he's pretty fucking good. So it's not like it's just that easy when people throw these these comps around, and I'm just as guilty as everybody else, although I kind of might use it more as a negative. who do you have as a potential sleepers that maybe isn't in your top 10? And listen, this is, it's like May 20th or whatever day it is. Really early. There's still a long way to go. Who are a couple of sleepers that you're kind of keeping your eye on going like, these guys might be pretty solid?
Donovan Mitchell's just outside my top 10. He's moved up a lot, especially after the combine where he was 6'3", really stout frame, and then he had that, like, I think it's 6'11 wingspan, 6'10 wingspan, something like that. So he measured really well, tested incredibly well. He's just somebody I think that can guard the point of attack because of his strength at the next level. And he is a better shooter than I think the numbers would indicate. A lot of his struggles and stuff at Louisville, I believe, were shot selection and being the number one guy on that team. If you could get him in more of like a Norman Powell role, I think he'd be really well as like a primary, maybe point of attack defender and just a shooter if you really simplify what he has to do out there. So he's one guy from Louisville. Hamidou Diallo, who most people don't know about because he didn't play college basketball. We don't know if he's going to stay in the draft, but if we're talking about like a hyper elite athlete, that's what he is. I mean, he had a 44-inch vertical at the combine. This is someone who can really fly. What I like about him is he's not just an athlete. Like, he competes on defense, and, you know, he projects pretty well there. Like, he can probably guard point guards. He can guard twos. The question is offensively. Basically, everything he's done is in transition, so there's no really way to really project his offensive game. His shot is far away. So it's really an upside gamble in, like, the 12 to 20 range, I think, in this class. But if you're going to roll the dice, you might as well do it on elite athleticism for a guy that actually competes defensively. There's at least something there.
Yeah, I could see that. And Hamidou Diallo, oh God, I'm terrible with these names. You'd think I would have done a little more prep with this. You know, he's the guy that I think Coach Cal was basically like, if he gets drafted, I'm out.
Yep.
Love that.
Pretty great.
Kind of just wanted to get drafted now and see if Coach Cal actually sticks with his guns a bit on that one. You know, one thing I would offer to Coach Cal if he was in L.A. would be some lovely gelato. And I have my favorite gelato place here in downtown L.A., Uli's Gelateria, and they got some of the best flavors you can't go wrong with. They got Speculoos cookies. They got sea salt caramel, pistachio. They have flavors I didn't even know existed in terms of basil and olive oil. Summer's coming. It's going to be a nice. You're in downtown LA. Need something refreshing. This is the perfect thing for you. Uli's Gelateria. It's in the Spring Arcade, which is on Spring Street, in between 5th and 6th Street. You can't go wrong. The staff is great. I highly recommend it. And if Coach Cal's around, I will happily buy him, although he probably doesn't need me to pay for it, some gelato over at Uli's Gelateria.
That sea salt caramel sounds pretty good.
No, dude, it's amazing. I'm not going to lie to you, dude. The place is so good, and it's tough. It's just right down the street from me. It's on my route to the gym, and it's like a debate every time on my way back from the gym.
Oh, that'd be a bitch, man. That's not good.
It's definitely like I have to like walk the longer route to make sure I just don't tempt myself, but it's great. And it is healthier for you. It is lighter than ice cream and all that good stuff. So highly recommend anybody if they're around. Check out Uli's Gelateria in downtown LA. Cole, you're up in the northwest. If you come down to LA, I'll happily treat you more than I would be happy to pay for Coach Cal's.
There you go, man. Adidas Nation's in August. We'll see.
There we go. All right, my man. Well, I was banking on you never coming to LA though, Cole. So don't actually come.
Sorry to foil plan. So
damn it. when you're looking, this happens every year in the draft, and it might be early. There are always guys that rise way above what people thought early on or even slip in the draft. You know, over the next few weeks, who are guys you think who have the potential of rising? I know we did sleepers, you know, and it might be some of those guys, but who are some of the other guys you think who can rise in the draft or might see their stock fall a little bit?
The risers usually kind of affiliate with the shooters. If they go on and they have a knockout shooting performance in these individual workouts, so Lauri Markkanen, Malik Monk, those are two guys that really could just shoot the living hell out of the ball in a workout and rise up, even though both of them are pretty high on most boards. I'm a little lower on Lauri, but both those guys could easily knock the hell out of a personal workout. Some other guys, maybe Nilakina, for guys that haven't seen him as much in like a private workout setting. He's just someone who I think probably every team has seen internationally, so they have some good idea. But if he comes in again and shoots well, some guys I'm high on that kind of affiliate with sleepers, Jordan Bell out of Oregon. Just I think people are going to really like his character. He's someone who is a niche player in the NBA because of his frame. He's a backup five, but I feel like he can play on the floor in the playoffs. Very switchy. His agility tests at the combine, I don't really put a ton of stock into that kind of stuff, but they were like really generational kind of numbers. And that really supports the eye test with the Oregon big. Like, he's fantastic moving laterally, can protect the rim. Juwan Evans is another guy that I expect to move up a little bit, the point guard from Oklahoma State. Really skilled. The only problem is he's 6 foot, so he's really small. But overall, I think that he could move up boards.
Gotcha. I'm not deep enough in the prospects of the draft to be able to give you those aspects, but I would be able to tell you, like, I've been involved in draft workouts. It's true. Like, there are guys that come in these workouts, and every team does them differently. But the most important thing we keep track of at every draft workout I've been a part of was always how well the guys shot. You know, the things we kept our eyes on were how well they shot, how well they competed, because that was a big thing. You know, there were guys that would come into our draft workouts, whether I was with the Clippers or the Spurs, and you could just tell, like, if they wanted to be there, we're ready to compete, we're ready to go after it. It was a bit different with the Spurs because everybody wanted to impress Coach Pop if he happened to be there at the workout. And with the Clippers, at the time I was there, we weren't doing so well in my first stint with them. So you had guys that would kind of dog it a little bit, hoping to not get drafted by the Clippers. So you see a lot of things like that. You know, then we do things like 3-on-3 and kind of, you know, hopefully usually you get around 6 guys at these workouts and you try to see who's going to compete and who can pick up things on the fly and so on. So the workouts are where you're going to see a lot of guys rise and fall, for that matter. So the next few weeks are going to be really interesting. That's usually what I love to stare at, and I love to hear about workouts are going and who's killing it. And you're right, shooters can just go nuts and light it up.
Yeah, I think 2 more shooters, DJ Wilson out of Michigan. These are both fours. Kyle Kuzma, who played really well at the combine, shot the ball well. Those are two guys that have kind of, they have pretty good size for the four. DJ Wilson could probably even play some backup five or swing to the five spot. So if they shoot well, like, I would also monitor them as guys who might be like fringe first round right now that can move up a little bit.
Gotcha. Who are some of your overrated prospects? Who's like, when you hear a guy's name, you just start shaking your head going like, oh God, this guy.
One of them we've already talked about is De'Aaron Fox. I'm not as high on him. I think I have him 12 right now, and there's a lot of guys that I've seen have him top 5. It's just I don't get it. We've seen you can delineate him from some of the other guys that have struggled, right? Chris Dunn, Fox is a better decision maker. Moutier, Fox is faster. He's quicker. So a lot of these guys that we've seen, Elfrid Payton, the same goes for him. Fox is definitely faster than him with the ball. So they're not like analogous, but any point guard that can't shoot and isn't like an elite speed to power athlete for me, like a John Wall, Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, Eric Bledsoe type, I get like that. That's a red flag for me. Like, those get my ears perked up when you get those guys. And I don't see that with Fox. Like, I just don't see how he finishes well enough at the rim if he can't shoot threes to be valuable offensively at the next level, especially when I don't think his defensive value is going to be that high. But I've already covered him pretty in depth. Lauri Markkanen's another guy for me. Can shoot the living hell out of the ball. He might be the best shooting big man in the league, so it's kind of hard to knock him that much because he has such an established skill. But he can't, I don't know who he defends at the next level at all. Like, he can slide a couple times, maybe moving laterally in space on hard hedges, but he's not somebody that can like flip his hips and change directions that well. He doesn't protect the rim at all. If guards attack him when he's moving backwards, you can just elevate right over him and he's not going to block your shot. So there's not a lot of value defensively that I see for him. And teams are just going to pick on him in high quality basketball in the playoffs. They're just going to run pick and roll after pick and roll, and he's not going to be able to stay with these guys. So I think he's going to be a good regular season player. If you're a competitive team and you can afford to have him as your third big, that's where I have him ranked as. I think he can be valuable in that role where in certain matchups he can just come in and really space the floor from the five and draw the opposing rim protector out if you can make him survive on defense. But he's a guy that I think you're going to pay a high cost benefit. When it comes to offense, defense, there's a huge trade-off with him. So he's just not somebody I usually gravitate towards, bigs who don't play defense.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've never been really a big fan of marketing of the very few college games I've watched, and he's not somebody that really kind of stands out. And it's, again, a big who doesn't play defense, doesn't protect the rim. It's great that he shoots it, but we saw how well Ryan Anderson did in the playoffs this year. Like, that's, those kinds of things sort of, they at least stay with me and kind of hurt me on those guys. I'm going to throw a couple wrinkles your way because we ran through my questions a bit quicker, and part of that has to do with the fact that I know nothing about college basketball. But where do you want to see some of these guys end up, you know, on which team? You know, we got the draft lottery, you know, on Tuesday. Where do you want to see these guys end up?
That's a great question. I think Jonathan Isaac on Minnesota would be fantastic. Putting him at the four spot, letting Karl Anthony Towns actually play the five defensively, and having Isaac fill that kind of superstar role player role around Wiggins, LaVine, and Towns. That's a really nice fit. They need somebody at the four who can do the things that he does, and you're not going to find a better candidate in this draft. Dennis Smith, I really hope he falls to nine. I don't think he will. He's probably not going to fall past New York at eight, but if he gets to Dallas, I really think he could be the second best player in this class. Just put him in spread pick and roll, make his reads easier, get him in Carlisle's system where they just churn out good production with point guards, and play next to Dirk with good spacing, and I think he could really thrive. So those are the two ones that stick out. Malik Monk, it's tenuous because I think Philadelphia at three is reaching a little bit, but he clearly fits like their two-person core right now. Can play off ball. He can play the one, in air quotes, and defend opposing point guards, even though Ben Simmons is going to play the point guard and be defended by force optimally. He's a good fit, but I really think that they should probably entertain trading back, even though it's not the worst thing if they take him at three because he's such a good fit. But that's another one that's like, it's kind of tenuous. The Sixers are in a really weird spot in this draft. That's like the main takeaway from the lottery.
Well, I'm kind of the other way on the Sixers, I think. Not just in this draft, but the way this lottery kind of turned out, they're kind of set this year, next year, and the year after. They're going to get the Lakers pick next year no matter what, completely unprotected, and assuming they don't get Paul George or something weird doesn't happen, odds are the Lakers are going to be pretty bad next year. Sorry, Laker fans. You know, and then after that, you know, 2019, they're going to have the Sacramento Kings pick again, completely unprotected. So it's like, it kind of worked out a little bit better, I think, for them instead of having two top picks in this year's draft. I'm always afraid to trade back a little bit, just a few spots, because you don't know who everybody else have on those boards. And you're right, it's a reach for Monk at three, but I think you go with the guy that might be the best fit for you. They've been a team that's definitely has drafted for the longest time on best available player, and maybe they right now need to start thinking fit. That's how you end up with 12 centers and the situation they were in last year where they had to start moving guys. So I think I actually wouldn't be upset if they added shooting in Monk. I don't think they need to add another point guard or add a guy who can actually be another lockdown defender. So I kind of actually think I like the Sixers' position. Now, if they get an option where they can trade down and pick up a pretty cool asset, yeah, of course they're going to listen and they got to pay attention to it.
But just to clarify real quick, I'm completely with you on their position overall, like moving forward. Their 2018 pick from the Lakers is going to be super valuable. You have a lot of really high ceiling outcome guys in that class. And 2019 with the Kings, that's fantastic. I just think in this draft, like with their needs aligned with the board, if Ball goes too, Ball would be a great fit in Philadelphia too. I just think that he fits better than Jackson, who most people think is the third best prospect in this class. I don't really think so, but a lot of people think that way, and they're just positioned to where they're the best value on the board doesn't align with what they need currently.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. But talking about trades, if you're the Lakers, if you're Boston, do you entertain trading the first pick, the second pick for maybe a guy in Indiana who seems desperate to get out of there?
I mean, in Boston, if they think they have a good chance at Gordon Hayward in free agency, I think it makes some sense to align those two. For the Lakers, it makes a lot less sense because even if they get Paul George, like, what are they really going to be? I mean, it's good to have a really great player, a top 15 player for sure, but they don't really get to reap the immediate rewards of that. It's more of a long-term projection, especially if they have to part with assets to get him. It depends on what they have to give up. Is it the number two pick and D'Angelo Russell? We don't really know as far as that goes. But for the Celtics, I think they should definitely entertain it if it's on the table. If they have a good idea of who they can get in free agency, whether that be Blake Griffin if he moves, who knows, or if it's Gordon Hayward, they can align both him and Paul George there. That would make a lot more sense to me. But yeah, I think Boston's in a position where it's going to have to take Paul George, Jimmy Butler, that kind of player for them to part with Fultz for sure.
Yeah, I got you. It's definitely going to take a lot to – well, problem is also their value for Paul George is slowly declining, especially as everybody, every rumor is he's heading to LA as a free agent, doesn't matter where he ends up. So that's really hurting them. It obviously hurt Indiana today when the All-NBA teams came out and Paul George wasn't on it. So can't get the super duper max, as I like to refer to it. And that's kind of the situation they're in the conundrum, you know. And for Boston, I waffle back and forth between it. But after watching them get their asses handed to them yesterday, I no longer think they're just really one player away. So it's like, for me, I kind of don't think they should trade for him. You know, if you felt like you're one guy away to be able to beat the Cavs and really compete for a championship, that's one thing. But last night was such an ass whooping. It was hard to watch, and it just made me further realize, like, yeah, you guys aren't there. You got a ways to.
Yeah, and I was with that with the trade deadline and stuff. If they were trading all those assets for either George or Jimmy Butler, I didn't think it made any sense, because neither one of those guys independently is going to put them over the top of LeBron. It's just not going to happen. But if you can get like a couple guys, maybe a couple of top 20 players, that would make it maybe worthwhile. But just for one, I would not part with assets.
Well, Cole, I think that's it, man. I mean, I got to do some homework, man. I got to be able to try to get ready for the draft, which is month and a half away, and I got to start studying on these guys. You've definitely have given me a good heads up. Can you tell the people where they could find you, you know, where to find you on Twitter and what you're working on?
At Twitter, at Cole Zwicker. I write for the Step Back pretty regularly these days just because the draft's here, so there's something to write about pretty much every day. Video breakdowns, stat breakdowns. I'm doing the top four lead guards right now, so Markel, Dennis Smith, Lonzo Ball, and De'Aaron Fox, and kind of going through different elements of their games. Like this week, I'm going to do finishing into the beginning of next week. So just looking at their independent skills. I have a podcast called What's on Draft, where I host with Mark Whittington and Javier Pesquera. And we do that usually once a week. We haven't done it very much recently, but we break down pretty much everything you need to know about the draft. So we'll probably talk about the combine this weekend. I also have my own website, capstrategist.com, where I used to do a lot of cap stuff. I haven't done as much lately because there's just no damn time. But I have a lot of player archetype stuff. I designed this kind of draft projection system of categorizing players, which I don't know. I'm not sure how much value it has, but it took a while to do. So maybe check that out.
Definitely. Everybody, please check it out. I'm going to be listening to your podcast just so I can start studying up here on the draft. So you got one new listener there in that regards. I'll be ready to go and start getting my lessons, as we shall put it, getting educated on the college kids.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that, man, if you can actually suffer through the production quality, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I imagine it's not going to be any different than mine, my man. So
there you go.
Cole, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for this week's podcast, guys. I hope you enjoyed them. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and have yourselves a great weekend.